You know, when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what they really have? The streaming service actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the good old US of A. That means you're missing out on literally thousands of great shows. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location, protecting your devices from unwanted snooping and allowing you to control where streaming services and other websites think you're located. There are over 100 different locations to choose from, which means you have access to thousands of new shows and movies no matter where you live. This doesn't just work with Netflix, it works with Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, a UK streamer called BBC iPlayer, and more. I was on a work trip in the UK during the final season of Game of Thrones, and I tried logging into my HBO account to watch a new episode, but the technology wouldn't let me because of geo-blocking. And I wish I had this app at that moment, because I now realize how incredibly easy it is to work around that problem. Here's a more recent example. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is not streaming on Netflix in the US, but I just fired up the episode where Dennis tries to have a peaceful mental health day, and technology keeps interrupting his plans. All I had to do was open ExpressVPN, connect to a UK server, refresh Netflix, and the show just popped up. It's super easy. I've also heard good things about that show called Billions, but I've never been a Showtime subscriber, so I've never seen it. But it's actually available right now on Netflix in South Korea, and with ExpressVPN, it took 5 seconds to switch over and start checking it out. With ExpressVPN, you get high-quality streaming from devices like your phone, laptop, tablet, and TV, and crucially, it protects your privacy and security to keep your information safe from hackers. Stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you all 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film to get 3 extra months completely free.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, May 9th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to present an interview with the director and co-writer of one of the wackiest movies of 2024, Hundreds of Beavers. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
All right, BJ, you and I spoke a little bit about this movie on a recent episode of The Water Cooler on this podcast. Our review from Fantastic Fest 2022 says Hundreds of Beavers, quote, exists at the crossroads of Looney Tunes, Benny Hill, Cannibal the Musical, Blazing Saddles, and Adult Swim. So this movie is available to watch on VOD right now, and I would encourage people to seek it out. It's wild. It's fun. It's a great time. Okay, BJ, do you have any way to succinctly describe this movie to people? When you tell people about it, how do you describe it?
So I'm glad that you asked this because I actually got to practice doing this yesterday. I was at an event with some other film folks that write for other publications after we all saw a movie, and we had the conversation, what have you been watching lately? What's everyone seeing? And I said, what do y'all know about Hundreds of Beavers? And they all kind of stopped for a second and they went, I'm sorry, what did you just say? And I said, I know you heard me. I said Hundreds of Beavers. So already that is going to get people's attention because that title is incredible. But the way that I pitched it to them is I said, look, this is a silent black and white comedy film about an Applejack maker who is going to try to capture and kill as many beavers as humanly possible in the middle of winter. It is nothing but slapstick comedy and very fun sound effects. And all of the animals are portrayed by actors in mascot costumes. And that's all I had to say. And everyone was like, well, I'm adding it to my watch list immediately.
Yeah, I think that's pretty great. The movie is so bizarre that I think being able to narrow it down at all is an impressive feat. So I'm glad that you pulled that off, both for, you know, the friends that you were speaking with and also for our listeners' sake. So I guess, is there anything that you want to say before we just like dive right in? Because you had a nice lengthy 20 minute chat or something with Mike Cheslick, the director and co-writer here.
So I was very excited to get to talk to him. One, because I think that this movie is brilliant and so funny and really just speaks to my core as a person. But also, Mike Cheslick, like myself, is Midwest to the core. He is so Wisconsin, and I say this as a compliment. So it was very nice to get to talk to somebody who works in the industry that is also from, you know, a similar area around where I grew up, because regional sensibilities in America are very much a thing, and we don't often see that. So I do want people to know going into the interview that he has like a very distinct sense of humor. Do not take everything that he says seriously. Some of it is very much a joke. So just so you know, I think you'll know it when you hear it. But it was such a delightful conversation to talk to somebody where I'm like, oh, you get me and your comedy gets me. And this is the best perk of doing this job, is getting to have these conversations. And learned a lot about the making of this movie, some stuff I was very surprised to hear that I'm sure other people will hear and also be surprised to hear. But yeah, he's just such a funny person, and talking to him, it's like, I get that you're the guy who makes this movie.
Okay, well, here is BJ's conversation with Mike Cheslick.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. My first question is one I have been dying to ask since I saw this movie. Let's talk about how much Wisconsin rules.
Yes, correct. We knew this film could only be made in Wisconsin, where no one minds being in the snow because they're too drunk to notice.
Listen, I grew up right on the border of Illinois and Wisconsin, so I spent a lot of my formative years in Wisconsin, especially because I could go to the bars with my parents and drink before I was 21. So
this is how the whole country should be. There should be toddlers on top of the bars. I don't care what kind of dive it is. I don't care how dangerous it seems. There should just be little babies running around everywhere in the bar.
One of my favorite things to tell people out here in LA is how in Wisconsin, like, I think they still hold the record for the most people who get DUIs on riding lawnmowers, because people get their licenses taken away and then take the riding lawnmower to the bar, which that just, to me, that's home for me.
That's so funny. I don't want to out Wisconsin by like drawing too much attention to this one cultural thing, but there are signs on the snowmobile trails pointing to bars. It is the drunk driving is ingrained in the culture. The cities and counties are putting up signs with little martini symbols on them, and you're on your snowmobile trail and you pull in to a little bar like it's an RPG tavern, and then you continue into the night afterwards. And it's, you know, those ATVs you can drink on too. That's not even illegal.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. I loved that this movie was not just set in the Midwest, but it feels very Midwest. It has very Midwest sensibilities. And I think that we've been in such a drought in the last 30 or so years of films set in the Midwest authentically. And so I'm very protective of these movies, because everything is shot on the coast, or it's supposed to be set in the coast and then shot in Canada. But what do you think it is about Midwest movies? What do they provide that Hollywood produced movies just cannot capture?
Oh, I don't know. There's a different sense of humor. There's an earnestness, maybe. I also think the coasts have a lot of that improv comedy tradition. Obviously, Second City in Chicago is a huge source of comedy, but I will generally say, I think there's something about physical comedy in the Midwest, where like Midwest comedy is about making fun of each other for doing something wrong, or doing a job wrong, or physically being unable to do something. This is like Midwest humor to me. And I think on the coast, there's more verbal, I don't know, I just think of verbal UCB improv comedy when I think of New York. And I like that stuff too, but like, for me, something about physical comedy, and it's not, I don't know, are we earnest? Is Hundreds of Beavers earnest, do you think?
It's earnest in the sense that it speaks to me and my sensibilities and what I find funny. So for that, I think it's earnest. But I also think that part of Midwest humor is that there's always a little bit of playful ribbing happening at all times. Like, that never goes away. You show the people that you love them by ripping on them in some way, shape, or form. So yeah, that feels very real to me.
Yeah, that's why people from the Midwest are pretty good at reading the room, because they're ready for where they're going to get made fun of. And it's also why they say, oh, people from the Midwest seem so normal. It's like, yes, they had all of their rough edges teased off.
That's very true. And so speaking of the humor in this, I've seen a lot of people talk about how there's this very Looney Tunes inspired, which obviously like that's very much a thing, but there is such a dedication to the physical comedy. It's very slapstick, it's very Three Stooges, and I'm curious what your feelings are about this style of comedy and why we don't do it as often anymore.
For some reason, it sat dormant for decades. And like I've said this before, that if no one made a horror film for 30 years and one person just made one horror film, there would be this critical and audience reaction like, I forgot you could do this. So we're benefiting from that a little bit by just bringing back this genre that's part of a huge part of the 20th century American cinema tradition, and somewhat French tradition, but mostly America. But the French thing fit because it was a French fur trapper from the North Woods. Anyway, that genre just went away for some reason. I would say because we switched to a service economy and the alligator pit is now saying something wrong and having to go to HR, a verbal alligator pit. But in a country with more people with physical jobs, I think slapstick has more appeal. I think, like in China right now, there's a much more appetite for physical broad gags. And but America did it first and did it best, and we can do it again.
And I'm so shocked that it went away because what is Jackass if not physical comedy? And yet that seems to get to exist in its own bubble, and people don't see, you know, Johnny Knoxville is somebody who absolutely worships at the altar of like the Buster Keaton School of Comedy, and yet people disregard that commitment all the time, which I just find fascinating. I don't know if you feel similarly at all.
Do people think that, yeah, slapstick is lowbrow? It's probably as difficult to do as other forms of comedy, but yeah, people do feel smarter watching a Noel Coward play than they do watching Three Stooges.
Definitely. And I think you might have nailed something where it's about people feeling smarter. I think people have gotten to this point where they're so afraid to look foolish. They're afraid to look embarrassing or cringe, what have you. And you kind of have to own that in order for physical comedy to be successful, is to understand you're gonna look weird as hell at some point. The screenshot someone takes of your face is not going to be flattering. So I'm curious if you think that also is a contributing factor.
I think that you need to accept that somebody falling down is inherently funny, and you should just not be ashamed of enjoying life's simple pleasures like that. And I'm sorry if Hundreds of Beavers doesn't make you feel smart, but you know that the mascot thing is funny. You know that a guy getting hurt in a mascot costume is funny. Just accept it. I don't care if you're educated. I think people are too educated, and we wanted to make a film for dumber people or people that were willing to turn off their stupid brain.
I'm so glad. I mean, I like to think of myself as well-read, well-versed, but like this sort of movie just like intrinsically hit something in my soul that I'm never going to deny. Living out here, I always tell people like I was born Midwest trash, I will die Midwest trash, and that is who I am as a person. So this movie just really speaks to me in ways that not many movies do. So when you were developing this film, how closely does this final film align with your initial vision for the movie?
Oh, it expanded. The third act expanded as we went along, but this is the film we set out to make. It is uncompromised. We had total trust from our backers, who are all from like the Milwaukee area, and we had total trust from our team because it was just four friends of ours. So at any point, the crew was from two to six people, and it was complete trust. No one told us what not to do. We said, hey, it's going to be a 2-hour black and white silent comedy with all physical gags. And everyone said, all right. And we never had to defend that. And yeah, I don't know. Just having complete trust led to a totally uncompromised film that is exactly the vision we set out to make. So if you don't like it, that's because you don't like us, not because the execution was compromised.
Beautiful. So in directing, you know, the folks in the mascot costumes, they, I assume, have somewhat limited visibility. So how do you provide direction to people once their heads are already on? Do you have to like shift your entire body? Do you just shout it across the set? How does that
go? Yeah, I provided direction the same way I always do, just by screaming at my friends. And if you put someone in a horrible situation and then they just react naturally to that, we said, don't act like an animal. Don't research beavers. Don't just be a guy in a suit and do your very best to hit your mark. And when you screw up, it will be funny.
I mean, what's the, like, one of the core tenets of comedy is like dare to suck or dare to fail, whatever teacher is telling at that point. So I'm glad that was the instruction they were given, because I think there's such an authentic feel to everything everyone is doing. It feels very organic. It doesn't feel too rigid. So was there flexibility? Was there any improvisation on set, or was it, here's what we're doing and let's get it done?
I did not mean to provide any sort of support for improv as an art form. I did not mean to condone improv. I condemn improv. I'm sorry if when I said spontaneity, I meant like a guy missing his mark by 6 inches. And I think, that's a pretty funny little failure. This movie was boarded from stem to stern. We did exactly the boards, and I'm just standing out in the woods with my cartoons in my binder, and I'm saying, Quinn, make it look like my cartoon, and I hope the future is precise physical comedy in an animation pipeline with boards. No improv coverage of people in singles talking. It was very little changes from the storyboards.
Beautiful.
Few changes, I mean, not little changes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So working on this, I mean, there's obviously always going to be challenges when there's, you know, budgetary restraints of any kind. But were there any challenges during production that came up that you were not anticipating, or was this a go with the flow sort of set?
Well, the money came in slow. So we shot a first winter where we shot like the first act minus the cabin scenes, then slowly collecting money as we went along, selling more shares of our little Midwest LLC to our Midwest backers. So yeah, the difficulty is just it takes a while to get these backers together, and you know, slowly developing the look as you go. So by the end of the film, I'm like better at After Effects than I was like at the beginning of the film, because it's vaguely in order. It's vaguely shot, you know, first act, second act, third act. But what was the biggest problem? I don't know. The truck would get stuck in the snow, BJ. We'd be like shoveling it out every day. We'd be salting the stupid truck to drive a mile to get one shot of one guy that's half of an effect shot. So it was just slow, and it's just, you know, snafu, situation normal, all screwed up all the time. So yeah, it was probably a problem every day. We lost two cars. Rylan got frostbite. It was like the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Oh no. Like the truck getting stuck in the snow, I also think is something that people who are not from an area where it snows that heavily can't wrap their heads around. My car that I drive out here in LA is the same car that I had in Illinois, and it has remote start on it. And everyone always thinks that it is the most inventive technology they've ever seen. And then they don't understand why I have remote start. And I'm like, I don't know if you've ever seen somebody have to wake up at 4 a.m. to get their car out of the driveway and de-ice the vehicle so that you can go to work. But that is like a part of my coming of age experience, is getting up early for school to do that. So
yeah, everyone in LA is like, why is the bottom half of your car rusted out?
Right. It's like Salt. I don't know if you've heard of it, guys.
Oh, Quinn and I got stuck in Ryland. We were driving Ryland's car and we were scouting some swamp and we got stuck in Ryland's Ford Focus and I didn't even tell him this. He'll find out listening to this. I ripped the back of out of his trunk. I ripped the like fabric piece out of the bottom of the trunk to put under the wheel to get out of the snow because we were all out of options. We tried everything else. So then that fabric piece that we ripped out of his car got torn up so we could get his Focus out of the swamp. And then, but it doesn't matter because we totaled that car later by accident.
How did you total it?
You know, they got all these trees right near the road. What the hell's up with that?
You know, that's a great point because then the deer hide in there. So then they come out of nowhere and then you total your car that way too.
We got to get rid of these deer, you know. Where's the next generation of hunters going to come from?
They are an invasive species. Everyone forgets that part. They're like, oh no, deer hunting. It's like, no, they're invasive species. They're like, fucking shit up.
I'm sorry that there was no deer in Hundreds of Beavers.
So speaking of the animals, when you were thinking about the animals that were going to go in there, was it we have to have obviously Hundreds of Beavers, but we also have to have the rabbit, we have to have these animals, or was it these are the mascot costumes that I can get my hands on?
We knew beavers had to be involved. That was the main thing. You know, you need a bunny because of Bugs Bunny. The beavers had to be involved because I've said this before, there's a third act castle infiltration scene, so you need an animal. The titular animal has to be funny. And it has to have some kind of home base that you can sneak into for your third act castle infiltration. What else is in there? Raccoons? I don't know. That's just in there because that's the spirit animal of our fight choreographer, John Trey. I don't know why. He's obsessed with raccoons and he plays all the raccoons. What other animals are in the movie? That's probably it. I can't remember much about this movie.
Did you ever at any point feel obligated as a Wisconsin movie to have a badger?
Yeah, we thought it'd be funny if Bucky showed up and then we got tired and we're trying to get gags that, you know, linked up with other gags and were part of this whole apparatus of running jokes. So any like one-off Zucker joke like that, we mostly cut.
Gotcha. Was there anything after you did this like meticulous plotting that you were like, oh, I know that this gag is going to be just a pain to do? Or were you excited the entire time, regardless of difficulty of the gag?
No, the gag's funny once 5 years ago when you think of it, and then you slowly execute it over years and like an engineering problem, and it is funny at no point during that process. And then you finally put sound design on it and you see it with an audience a decade after you had the idea and everyone's laughing and it's still not funny to you.
So when you watch this movie with an audience and people are getting it, what does that do for you as a creative? Is it at the point where you're like, oh, they see it, they see the vision, or it's like, why do you idiots find this funny? I don't think it's funny anymore.
Oh, you're like assuming I feel things. This is just, we're here to make money. When I hear laughter in the theater, I just think that can be translated into money.
So something else I wanted to ask you about is I think a lot of people who fancy themselves cinephiles have an affinity for one of the greatest Wisconsin films ever made, American Movie. And a lot of people don't understand that that's a real place and that's real people. And do you think that reputation lingers over the Wisconsin film community at all? How do you feel about the American Movie reputation?
Well, it led to a couple of good kind of doc companies coming out of Milwaukee, and Milwaukee for some reason being kind of the doc place with Chris Smith. But that feeling in American Movie of the Sisyphean task of making a film without infrastructure on a mini DV camera, or in his case, like 16 millimeter at the UWM Steenbeck, that's like it's a lonely feeling. And I had done some broadcasting work in the coasts that I brought some of those skills into this movie, and we had a real marketing company, so I didn't feel totally out in the woods, but there's a very specific feeling of trying to make something in the Midwest so far from the industry and just it being this impossible dream and Yeah, in our case, 4 years in the snow, mostly a small team in a tent. I don't know. It's hard to explain exactly, but that's a very personal film for me and for a lot of Wisconsin filmmakers.
Yeah, definitely.
It's
I mean,
a masterpiece too, by the way. It's like one of my
it
favorites.
really is. I got to show it to a friend recently. I did specifically a Midwest like movie night, and they somehow had not seen American Movie, and I was like, you need to see this, like, and I need you to understand that, like, these are the people that I come from.
Yeah, Mike Shank passed recently, a beautiful
He
soul.
did. Yeah, over at Slash Film, we actually wrote an obituary for him, declaring him cinema's greatest best friend, because he is.
Yeah,
Our
he's
he
there
like
for his buddy through everything, and that's on this movie. It was just a lot of my old friends putting up with a lot of difficult shooting days, outside in the snow, and just having a great attitude the whole time. It's you need your friends to make a movie, not 100 Hollywood middlemen.
Yeah. No, I am right there with you. They'll be transparent with you. I'm a cancer survivor, and at one point it very much seemed like I was going to die, and I was living in Cleveland at the time, and I made a movie in Cleveland as like a here's my movie I'm making before I die, and then I didn't die, so now I have to answer to it in every pitch meeting that I ever have, which whoops. But
Well, every movie is a movie you make before you die.
that's a good point. It very much is. But it was, it's Midwest made. It's made with Midwest crew, Midwest actors, and there's also this sensibility, and I don't know if this was the same for you on this, where if you are making a movie in New York, LA, or even Chicago, Atlanta, people expect movies. So if you're like, hey, I want to shoot this scene in a restaurant, they're like, give me this money, give me whatever. But in places in the Midwest, where like the movies don't come there very often, people are like, oh, you want to shoot here? What can I do? Well, how can I help? Was
Oh yeah,
that.
in the yeah, totally. In Wisconsin, that like the cops are like, let me help you light the firework.
Right. So I'm glad to hear that that was the same with you working, working on this, because I think that's also something that is just so underappreciated when people are like, no, we need to make this cool, edgy New York movie. And it's like, or you could go to Detroit and people might help you out a little more.
And I don't know, in the North Woods of Wisconsin too, it's like, if you're making an unorthodox film, no one questions it. Like, why are you shooting it that way? Like, there is no film industry, so there's nothing unorthodox. It's already silly what you're doing. Like, making a film is already ridiculous. So you're not getting questioned for, like, why doesn't this look like a normal set? Why aren't you feeding everyone? Why are you whipping the actors? Why are you shoving people over? No, they don't question that kind of thing in the Midwest because they don't, that's like, they don't know what a set should look like. So you're allowed to make a film like Hundreds of Beavers that is like totally outside of the aesthetic Overton window.
Like it's like the circus is in town, so no one's gonna have any questions why there are suddenly clowns. Like that's very much it. So I'm yeah.
Oh, and we would just walk onto people's property and start shooting. What are you doing? Oh, we're making a movie. Oh, okay, carry on.
So I have time for like one last question. And we're currently in this very bleak landscape where studios and now even streamers are playing it safe, and they're focusing on these like quote unquote algorithmically predicted guaranteed hits. But what's it like to know that you've created something that is seemingly algorithm proof, that is finding its audience, and people are loving it regardless if whether or not a computer is telling them that they should like this?
It just comes down to physical comedy being foolproof. It's just always funny. Beaver, a mascot costume, somebody falling down, that's just like a principle of life. And you don't need new data to show you that it's funny when a person is cold or hurt.
Amen to that. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. This was wonderful, and I'm glad I finally had someone to talk to that could like Midwest out with me. This was wonderful, and congratulations on just an absolute banger of a movie. I cannot wait to see what you get to do next.
Thanks, BJ. Thanks for having me.
All right, BJ, before we go, I wanted to ask you if you were familiar with Mike's work before you saw Hundreds of Beavers. Hundreds of Beavers is his feature directorial debut. He had directed a few shorts before then. He was an editor of a movie called Lake Michigan Monster in 2018. That sounds like something that you might have seen. And then he also was the lead animator on the Netflix show The Get Down a few years back. So I was just wondering if you had sort of clocked him at all, or if this was the movie that put him on your radar.
So this is what made me go, okay, I have to pursue Lake Michigan Monster, because Lake Michigan Monster is something that's been in my kind of purview for a while, but there are also so many just absolute dog shit movies that come out of the Midwest that are not good. As much as I love the area, I'm very tapped into that film scene, and some of them are not great. So I heard the title and was like, well, that's great, because in Cleveland, the Lake Erie Monster is like a big thing. He like even has his own comic series. But I didn't see the movie because I think I foolishly assumed that it was going to be another one of these just like dirtball nonsense movies that get thrown into like the depths of hell of Amazon Prime at some point. But after seeing Hundreds of Beavers, I am 100% tracking this movie down. I need to see it. I need to know how it plays out and what they bring to the table, because like I'm a lifer now for this guy. Like I'm ride or die for whatever he makes, because he just gets it, and he's making things that no one else is making, and that is something I will always champion.
Yeah. He also wrote the story for Lake Michigan Monster, so I'm going to have to seek that out as well. And yeah, like watching Hundreds of Beavers is so refreshing, because, and I think you talked to him about this, just like the idea that like this project is so specific. This is not something that is like really, you know, part of the Hollywood conversation in terms of like what's sellable, you know, what can we do to get the kids on board or whatever. It's just like a vision from a very, very like hyper specific perspective that is, it just feels like, oh my God, I can't believe this person actually pulled this thing off. So I can't wait to see what he does next. So fingers crossed on a new project from him coming at some point soon down the line. So
definitely. And I mean, I also want to shout out Matt Donato, who reviewed this movie for us back out of South by back in 2022. He has been championing this movie since day one. And just in like the last 2 weeks alone, like even publications like Variety are now covering Hundreds of Beavers. And so I feel like a great sense of pride at Slash Film that we were part of like the people preaching this from the very, very beginning. So it was a nice full circle moment, I think, to talk to him and be like, I mean, because Matt's quote is on the poster for Hundreds of Beavers. So like Slash Film was here on the ground floor, and we're continuing to do the good work. And I'm very, very proud of that.
Excellent. All right. Well, you can find more about Hundreds of Beavers, including Matt Donato's review, which I will link to in the show notes, at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.